We got grandchild number 17.
Hello, everybody.
17. Well, hi, Rabbi.
Hello, hi, Rabbi. We all congratulate you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, we get as many as my parents had.
Okay. Okay, so next week I will be in Israel. I would try to do this, but it's like it's about 3 a.m. So all right. I would like to just review what has been going on in Israel at the time of these last few prokim of Shmuel Bet, because David has a lot of reconstruction to do. Right, there has been basically what you might call a civil war. Yeah. Some tribes in Israel went to war against other tribes in Israel. Right, and mostly the only ones that really stayed with David was Yehuda from Jerusalem. Right, so when Avshalom was killed, as often happens, the one leading the revolt. I mean, if George Washington had been killed, would we have succeeded? I don't know. But it often happens that they took out Avshalom. Okay, it's over. So which is of course the necessary thing to do. Only David ordered that not happen. Okay, but be that as it may, the David wants to rebuild the nation, and he makes a gesture which is amazing by appointing the head of Avshalom's army to run his own army. That's just amazing. That's like making Robert E. Lee the head of Union forces after the Civil War. Of course, that was meant to slap in the face the head of David's army, who had just killed Avshalom. David was very well aware that Avshalom flouted his command in not touching Avshalom and returning him maybe chained or shackled, but alive, right? So, Yoav knows that David knows that, but Yoav also knows he has the goods on David, right? Because he's the one who carried out the order of having an important general killed. So there's a lot of political intrigue going on here, and it's you know, earlier on in Shmuel Bet, when it was bad news for Yoav that David appointed Avner to run his forces, and that wouldn't sit well with Yoav. But Yoav had a separate reason for wanting to get rid of Avner, because Avner had killed his brother Asael, remember earlier in Shmuel Bet. Plus, Yoav could consider Avner a traitor for appointing Ish-bosheth king when David was clearly the better choice. Right? But one way or another, Avner was about to draw a peace treaty with David. And it's not up to Yoav to make that decision. It's up to David to make that decision. So before they had a chance to finish things off and sign a pact, Yoav gave Avner the Chomesh treatment, and he's about to give Amasa the Chomesh treatment. Right? So after David patches Yoav in the face, he appoints Amasa to a mission. Right? He has a mission because, as I believe you did last week, there's another problem. His name is Sheva ben Bichri. Sheva ben Bichri is from the tribe of Binyamin. And as you can imagine, Binyamin was still wanted to be a player. You know, they produced the first king. And you can't just walk away in the sunset that way. There was no time in history where power was passed over the way it is in the United States, right? And even that has been a little troubled of late. But when John Adams lost the election to Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, he didn't want to continue being president. But John Adams did want to continue being president, right? And when he lost, that was a big moment in American history, right? But he knew that the Republic needed to be have a peaceful coexistence between those who wanted Thomas Jefferson to become president and those who didn't. And here, when it comes to Sheva ben Bichri, it's another someone from Shevet Binyamin, there's this terrible fear that the people from Binyamin might want to go back to the old ways. Look, David was convinced that is what Mephibosheth wanted, right? He was convinced by Tziva that that's what Mephibosheth wanted. That David and Avshalom should kill each other, and then Israel would run back to want to be ruled by Binyamin, right? I must tell you, at this time in history, people did not make a measured choice with surveys and answering many questions over who's better for you to rule, this person or that person. And people were generally servile. Look, when this, I believe you did this last week, but that when Sheva ben Bichri declared his revolt after Avshalom was killed and after David reunites the people, it says in the pasuk, it's amazing, right? It says that after he said, "Ein lanu chelik b'David v'lo nachal alanu b'ben Yishai," so it says, "Vayal kol ish Yisrael me'acharei David acharei Sheva ben Bichri." So it's crazy, just like this. They didn't get their message. They didn't get the memo after Avshalom's revolt that David is your king. Right? Now, this might be an exaggeration to say every Israelite followed Sheva ben Bichri. No, that's impossible. Right? Okay, but it just says that only the tribe of Yehuda stuck with David. And here's another quick popular revolt. And David is more afraid of him than of Avshalom. Because as I've told you many times, Avshalom's revolt did not start as a rebellion against David. It started, as Abravanel proves, as a rebellion against a potential other son of David's that might rule. David is only has a year or two left in his reign, and Avshalom wants to make sure that he's the man of peace that's supposed to build the temple. It's in my name. I don't care about that Shlomo. I was named Avshalom 30 years before him. Right? I should say more like 20, 25 years before him. Okay, so Amasa is now the chief of staff. David puts him in charge of quelling the Sheva ben Bichri revolt. Okay, and that puts us in Pasuk Dalet. V'yomar Melech al Amasa Hazek li es ish Yehuda shloshes yamim v'ata palamod. In 3 days, I want all of the people of Yehuda in the army to be here, to be standing right here near me. Vayelech Amasa lahazik et Yehuda. Amasa went out in order to do that. Now, when it says he went out in order to do that, does that mean that he did it? He went out in order to fulfill the king's word in gathering an army to defeat Sheva ben Bichri. What happened though? It's this very unusual Hebrew word, never used again in the Bible in this form. It says, Vayocher. Vayocher. Very strange kind of word. It comes from acharei, right? To become after something. In other words, the time that he came, well, he never ended up coming, but he was late in coming. Okay, Vayocher min hamoed asher ye'odo. Right, it's very difficult to understand the meaning of these words, because Vayocher means that David told him to be there at 2 o'clock and he came at 3 o'clock. Right, he came late. You get it? Vayocher here, however, means he never got there. Okay, you'll see in a moment, he never got there. He was killed before he got there. Right? So I would rather translate Vayocher not as he came late, right? Not as my English translation near the Koran says, he was later than the set time which he had assigned to him. I don't know. He never got there because Yoav killed him. Okay. So it says, "Vayomer David al Avishai, ato yera lanu Sheva ben Bichri min Avshalom." So David turned to Yoav's brother Avishai. That's his cousin, right? Avishai's mother and David are siblings, so it's his nephew. Remember David el Avishai, Atoy Yerah Lanu Sheva. So this man will do worse than Avshalom did. Okay? Bad as Avshalom was, this man has the potential to be worse. He's for Bedomin. So he says, Kaches Avdei Adonacho Redof Acharov, Pen Matzalo Arim B'tziros V'Yitzilei Neinu. You better chase after him. Push him out. He might get some granaries. He might get some storehouses. He might get some weapons depots. And who knows how much stronger he can get. It starts off slow, but then he could pick up. Right? And then this could be terrible for us. So he calls upon Avishai to do what Amasa was supposed to do. Now, when Yoav killed Avner, he might have killed him because you killed my brother. He might have killed him because he was a traitor. Why did you appoint Ish-bosheth king when everybody in Israel knew, based on the way they spoke to David themselves in chapter 5, everybody in Israel knew that David was supposed to be the next king. So you're a traitor by appointing Ish-bosheth king. Right? So Yoav could have felt some kind of self-righteousness in wanting to take Avner out. Of course, there was also a third reason, a very personal reason, is that he's about to take my place as chief of staff of the army. So I better dispatch him now. Okay. What excuse might he have to get rid of Amasa, though? Well, it's right here in our pasuk. He was supposed to gather an army within 3 days to put down Sheva ben Bichri. By not doing so, now, should we say we'll never know what the truth is? But by not doing so, isn't it possible that he was protecting Sheva ben Bichri by not putting together this army? Isn't it possible in the eyes of Yoav, or in a way that he can perhaps convince the king that this man deserves to die because he's a traitor? Because he's not doing what you told him to do to Sheva ben Bichri. And that Yoav, if he's called to task for this, would say so. But alas, Yoav never had a chance to say so. In fact, David doesn't do anything to Yoav now. Do you remember in what it's we read about it? It's the Haftorah of Parshas Vayechi. Sound familiar? But David calls over Shlomo and tells him to set some records straight and give a couple of people what they deserve. Right? Remember that? So that's where he tells Shlomo to make sure to kill your cousin Yoav because he killed two men better than he was. He killed Avner and he killed Amasa. Right? But I submit to you that Yoav could have felt the need to kill Amasa not simply for a personal reason. Of course, he gets that too. But that he might have felt that Amasa was being a traitor by not showing up. Okay? That's why David had to send Abishai. Vayitzu acharav anshe Yoav v'hakresi v'haplesi. Pasuk Zion. Kresi uplesi is usually translated as slingers and archers. Okay? Kresi uplesi are slingers and archers. However, there is a Gemara in Maseches Brachos that says that Kresi uplesi is actually the Urim v'Tumim. Okay? Or in Sefer Shmuel, the function of the Urim v'Tumim, which is like the breastplate where the Kohen Gadol presses the buttons to ask questions of God, and various lights shine up to give him the answers, right? The function of that Urim V'Tumim is, in Sefer Shmuel, a linen ephod. Sound familiar? A linen ephod. Remember the one that Eviatar carries around? David used to ask God if whether certain people are going to fight against him, turn him into Sha'ul. Okay, it's called an ephod bad. It's one of the big dikur kohen gadol. Okay, so Okay, so that's the crazy placey. But I have to tell you, when it says the crazy va placey v'chol ha-giborim, the crazy placey are part of the giborim. Right? I mean, they're listed separately, but it means that the slingers and the archers and all the mighty men. So they went on the offensive to run after Sheva ben Bichri. Hem ima even hagadola shebegivon ba amasab ba lifnehem biyov chagur midol levushol va alav chagur cherev mitzumedes al masnav b'tarav hu yotzav atipol. Wow, charged pasuk. He talks. The pasuk speaks about that Yoav was armed, well armed. Okay, and when it says that his sword was across his waist, right, and it was in a ta'ara, which is sheath, v'hu yatzav batipol, and it fell out of its sheath. You see, this is Yoav's way of, oh, oops, I dropped that. So he bends down to pick it up. He's getting a little head start of being armed in front of Amasa. Get it? Okay. We are in Perek Chaf, Pasuk. We just did Pasuk Chet. All right. So Yoav, if Yoav has his sword tucked away and then he pulls it out, so Amasa is going to feel like, Yoav, what are you drawing a sword on me? What is this, a duel? Fencing match? Right? No. What happens is Yoav makes like it fell out of its sheath. So he goes down to pick it up. He's got it in his hand already. You get it? He say, oops, sorry about that. Oh, what happened? Right? So he goes over to Vayomer Yoav la'amasa. Hashalom ata ochi. Now, what's the relationship between Yoav and Amasa? Same. Get this? Listen carefully. Amasa's father, Yoav's mother, and David HaMelech are all siblings. Okay? Got it? Avshalom, Yoav, and Amasa are all first cousins. Okay? Okay, so he goes over and he says, my brother, you see, I have a note here, Rav Sadugon. You've heard of Rav Sadugon, has a, I don't know if I should call it a perush to the Torah, it's called a tafsir. It's actually an Arabic translation to the Torah. And of course, a translation ends up being a commentary. Rav Sadugon and some of the scholarly notes that are written on him and some of his interpretations has a really fascinating, in Parshas Acharemos, fascinating discussion about the chapter that tells us all the relatives we're not supposed to marry. And he shows how all of the relationships, aim of ach, achos, ben, bas, he shows how they're used as metaphors. In other words, an ach, Aleph Ches is usually a brother, right? It's also a firebrand, by the way, a fireplace. But Aleph Ches is a brother. But you see here, Amasa and Yoav are not brothers. All right, but that's come on. People call someone else brother in Tanakh quite often, even though they don't share a parent. Okay, BT. Naomi calls Rus BT, my daughter. Right? Ruth was not Naomi's daughter. Right? Boaz calls Ruth BT. Right? Okay. Dvorah says, Ad shakamti Dvorah shakamti aim be Israel. She calls herself the mother of Israel. A little presumptuous. So this is he specifically uses this as an example where Yoav calls someone my brother 2 seconds before he kills him. Atochas yad yamin Yoav bizikan Amasa. Yoav's right hand grabbed Amasa by the beard, Linshoklo, to give him a kiss. Obviously, the sword was in Yoav's left hand. Yoav doesn't say he was a lefty. Like, remember the name of the person who killed the king with his left hand? Lepikius? The name of the person, he's a shofet, who killed the Moabite king with his left hand. That's correct. Very popular Binyaminite name, Ehud ben Gera. Okay, and apparently Yoav was also trained himself to use the left hand. The Binyamin were naturally lefties. Leave it to Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid to explain. You see, Binyamin, the youngest son of Yaakov, always walked to the right side of Yaakov. He's my Binyamin, my son who walks on my right side. That, you see, strengthened Binyamin's left hand. You get it? He taught himself how to be strong with his left hand. And that's what all the Shevet Binyamin did. They worked themselves. It doesn't necessarily mean they were naturally left-handed. But you know, I know until relatively recently, if you showed that you were a left hand, they tied that hand behind your back and forced you to write with your right hand. Okay, I have an aunt that they did that to. Okay. So, but if he grabbed him by he grabbed his beard with his right hand, that means he stabbed him with the left hand. Another trivia question. This one's much harder. This is on all the Bible tests. People have lost the Chidon Tanakh over this question, right? It says the more common case, Yoav grabbed Amasa by the beard and killed him. Who else grabbed something, that might give it away, by the beard to kill it? Notice I didn't say a person. So if it's not a person and someone killed it, it's got to be an animal. When David tried to convince Shaul that he could kill Goliath, he said, what?
Is it a lion that he killed?
Close. Not a lion, but a bear.
A bear?
Yeah. I guess a bear also has a beard. But a lion does too. And I, you know. Anyway, it says, David says, I grabbed the bear by the beard, and I killed him. Okay? All right. So two places in Shmuel where someone is grabbed by the beard shortly before being killed. All right. So here it says he grabbed him with his right hand to the beard, and Amasa was not protected. You know, usually when you're in the presence of someone you know is wants to kill you and has a good motive to kill you, you yourself are a trained soldier and fighter and defender, usually you... And by this time, this is inexcusable, because by this time Yoav has a reputation. I understand why Avner didn't protect himself. Avner couldn't fathom that Yoav would so jeopardize David's reputation by killing him. Remember what David has to do after Avner gets killed, remember? Yeah? Leon, you're still on mute.
Yeah, he had to tell the whole people that, you know, he had to mourn over him.
Right, he had to excessively and profusely mourn. And at the end of the parak, it says, and all of Israel knew that David didn't order the hit on Avner.
Yeah.
Okay. Now here it's a little less clear. I mean,
after all, Amasa was the head of Avshalom's army, so.
Yeah, but it's pretty clear, it's pretty well known that he's now the head of David's army.
Right.
And then, you know, Yoav's motive is clear. Everyone in Israel knows what he's doing. But in the end, he can argue and spread out, you know, it's all called disinformation or propaganda or whatever it is. He can put out the word that, hey, I'm a tzaddik. I killed him because... by not showing up on time with the fences.
He's jeopardizing.
David had to send my brother instead. He's spinning it. Right? Do you agree? He's spinning this in a different direction.
Right.
Okay. So it says, but Belo Nishmar Bacherev Asher Biyad Yoav. He did not look, because if his right hand, no one holds his sword in his left hand. Right? You can't thrust a sword strong enough with your left hand. Right? But Yoav obviously could. Right? Ve'akehu ba elachomesh. Uh-oh. That kills instantly. Ve'ishpoch me'ov arza. Yikes. Yoav was such an experienced, trained, how can I call a trained killer, that he knew how to really kill him instantly. Right? Ve'lo shana lo ve'yamos. Brilliant, brilliant Hebrew. Ve'lo shana bo means he didn't have to do anything more. It was the one thrust killed him. He didn't have to stab him 47 times. The one thrust killed him. Ve'yoav avishai achiv radaf acharei sheva ben bichri. Here, you don't get David's reaction. All right? David's reaction comes up later in the Haftorah of Parshas Vayechi, which I mentioned before.
Yeah.
All right, so you see the blood. Now, does this remind you of remember when the story when Asael was killed by Avner, when he ran into the sword that Avner held tight? It says that there was blood all over the place and that all the people gathered to see what was this. So here too, it says that Amasa mitgolel badam betocha mesila. And Amasa was just totally covered in blood. Right? Mitgolel badam means to wallow in blood. Everybody just walking by and saying, tisk, tisk, what a terrible thing. Until someone finally covered him with a cover, until they could get together the effort to bury him. Okay. No reaction here yet from David. Okay. Because there's still a big fish to fry right here, isn't there? Yeah. Sheva ben Bichri has not gone away.
Right.
All right. Okay, this is just a sort of a blip. But come on, Sheva ben Bichri needs to be vanquished, and we're killing our own generals? What's with that? The answer is Yoav is a totally, totally... let's call him a bull in a china closet. You know, he's right. He doesn't think things through. He doesn't think what are the ramifications. He's just so used to being the right one on the battlefield, and this is what he does. Okay. All right. What's interesting is that when David calls over Shlomo in that Haftorah that I just mentioned, to say, get even with Shimi ben Gera, who cursed me when I was running away, get even with Yoav for killing Avner and killing Amasa. Right? He says also, do good things to Barzillai HaGiladi, who gave me food while I was running away. What's interesting is that when he tells Shlomo why he needs to get rid of Yoav, he says because Yoav killed two men more righteous than he was, Avner and Amasa. Do you notice some obvious thing that David does not mention to him?
So he doesn't mention what he had over him.
Okay, yes, that's true.
But that's obvious why he wouldn't.
It could be also that maybe that whatever he had over David, he might have over Shlomo too.
Yeah.
Why should we be ruled by the son of this woman?
Right, right.
He didn't mention Avshalom.
He didn't mention Avshalom, right. He should have mentioned Avshalom. I told him not to kill your brother, and I told everybody not to kill your brother. David seems to want to avoid the whole Avshalom thing. There is a medrash that there was something between Avshalom and Shlomo. You get it? You can't build me this house, but your son, who will be a man of peace, will build me this house. Right? So David shortly afterwards names a child Shlomo, but he already has a son named Avshalom. Okay.
Did he say someplace that he was, that Hashem told him that you'll have a son, Shlomo?
That's how it appears in Divrei Hayamim. But that could have been manipulated. But I'm willing to go along with it. It could be that God told him, name his name Shlomo. Or that the editors of Divrei Hayamim, who change around certain aspects of Malachim for whatever the reasons are, how Sefer Divrei Hayamim appears, right, is how Shlomo expressed it. Okay? But the name Shlomo does not appear in the stories in Shmuel about the one that's going to build the temple. He just says your son. Okay? Okay.
Is that Sheila? Who's
Sheila, are you playing the harmonica? Okay. All right, so let's continue. Okay, so they continued to run after Sheva ben Bichri. I mean, Yoav should have asked him, hey, why are you late? Why doesn't he ask him?
He really wants to get rid of him. This is the bottom line.
Yeah, he's using this as an excuse. By the way, very interesting. I should have showed you a split screen, but I have a comic book. It's a comic book of the whole Bible. It's quite rare now. I have it in hardcover and I have it in softcover. It's falling apart. And it starts in Bereishis and it goes all the way down to Daniel and Esther and Ezra and Nehemiah. It's the Tanakh. It's made by Christians, but it's only the Tanakh. It doesn't go into the New Testament. And in the Shmuel Bet story of Yoav killing Amasa, he says to him, and that, you know, that cloud that you have when someone's talking, right? You know, whatever you call that thing, that balloon. Yeah. So he says to him, die for being a traitor against David, King David. Now, you can say, yes, everybody can see he was a traitor against King David because he sided with Avshalom, right? David is really hypocritical by coming down so hard just on the suggestion that Mephibosheth stayed behind as a follower of Avshalom. This guy was the head of his armed forces. Right?
Yeah.
So, but then it says, die for not, he says you're a traitor, but it doesn't say you're a traitor for following Avshalom. He says you're a traitor for not coming quickly enough to quell the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri. Okay. Now, the rest of our story about how they did quell the rebellion is actually brought down in halachic literature. Okay. What do I mean? Sheva ben Bichri managed to make his way into a walled town. Word got out which town he went to. He purposely went to a walled town. You ever play Risk? Like you risk if you control Australia, you can keep building up your armies and keep, because Australia only has one way in, right? Get the way in, but from Malaysia and New Zealand, whatever. So Australia has only one way in, and he wants to hold himself up in a walled city and build from there, build his rebellion from there. So Yoav wants to make sure that this rebellion does not take hold, right? And here I submit to you is the halachic literature. And this is where you find the name Sheva ben Bichri mentioned very often in halachic in responsa. Listen to what it is. Because Jews never were faced with these kinds of decisions, because our enemies had no shortage of apostate Jews who told them that if someone says, goes into a room crowded with people and he tells the teacher, let's say, or the leader, give me one person in this room or I'm going to wipe out the whole room. Right?
You can't now, do it.
Logic would say that you should pick somebody. Mm-hmm. Roll with the die anyway. Why should 30 people die? So halachically speaking, why can't I just pick that person? Because he's not a...
He's not named. You can't just pick.
He's not a rodef. He's not a rodef. He's not chasing anybody. He's not this,
right.
This person is not any more a threat than anybody else in the room. That being said, the halacha does allow a volunteer. The halacha does allow, let's say, the classroom or the gathering can make up some kind of independent criteria, right? Objective criteria, whereby everybody in the room agrees, let's say, that the one with the next birthday is going to be the one that gets chosen, right? You know what I'm saying? Or the one with the birthday, that the last birthday that to come here is the one that's chosen, right? Some kind of independent criteria, and then you hope that you're not the one, but you can't at random choose anyone because there's no one that's more guilty than anybody else. That's called a rodev. However, this is where the halachic literature comes in. If there is someone in the room who is a rodev kesheva ben bichri, that's the literature. Rodev kesheva ben bichri. How do you become a rodev kesheva ben bichri? Now, you can be a rodev without intent. A baby is sometimes a rodev against its mother. If in the process of being born, the mother's life becomes very much endangered, right? So we favor the mother's life over the baby's life. Once the baby emerges, then the baby is a human being. You can't choose one over the other, right? Okay, so however, if what you're by your actions, you are threatening someone else, right? So in such a case, take a look at, let's read Pasuk Chof at the end of this parak. Sheva ben Bichri goes into a walled city and hopes to build up forces in this city whereby he can spread out and start to conquer city after city and take over more cities. It's like, you know, how you conquer in Risk, the board game. So Yoav prepares a monstrous force and gets the word in to a woman, a wise woman, and he tells her that if you give over Sheva ben Bichri, it's fine. We'll let you go. But if you don't, if you continue to harbor him and you continue to allow him to remain in your city, we're going to wipe out the whole city. Again, it's give us that man or we'll kill all of you. Why are they allowed to give him over? I'm sorry, what was that?
It says he is not Sayyadu B'melech.
Well, he's a rodev and he's named. He's not a random person.
Right, he's a rodev. Okay. But listen, if the person comes in the room and he says, give me that person, he points to someone, or he says, or I'll kill everybody, the poskim debate whether that person becomes a rodev. Unless the authorities came in and said, that man killed somebody and he's finding refuge in your city, give him to us or we'll kill everybody. Right? This is a little different. It's not that Sheva ben Bichri committed murder. The Sheva ben Bichri is threatening to turn Israel into what it had just experienced for some months. Another civil war. Okay. This is the last time we hear anything about Shevet Binyamin in this realm. Remember a beautiful Malbim I shared with you some months ago, back in Perek Hay, why David chose to move his kingdom from the heart of Yehuda, which was Hebron, to the very, very tippy north of Yehuda, which is Yerushalayim. Why would he do such a thing? Because just due north of Yerushalayim, which straddles the Beis Hamikdash area, is Binyamin. And by bringing his kingdom up to Yerushalayim, which borders Binyamin, it was his way of making Binyamin feel more part of something. Not easy to step back from a kingdom you once controlled. Okay? So David wants to bring Binyamin somewhat into the fold. And this is the reward he gets. A revolt from Binyamin.
Yeah.
Okay. So Yoav hears from a wise woman about what the plan is, right? And Yoav tells her, "Vayan Yoav v'yomar cholilo cholilo." Also, a favorite Bible question, Bible contest question, which is just where does it say cholilo cholilo? Okay, here it is. Chol lila chas v'chalila. Now you see where it comes from. The etymology of the word is chol. Chol lila, sometimes it's just translated chalila. All right. Okay. The English translation read God forbid. Right. Chol means it's chulin. It's not a holy, not a divine thing for God to do. This would be right. Who was the first person in the Tanakh to use this word?
Huh?
Chalila?
You do justice, you don't do justice.
No. Chava, help us here.
Abraham.
It's Abraham in Parshas Vayera. When challenging
he says Chalila?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I have to look at that.
And Rashi says that it's Chulin. God, it's Chulin. You're God. You're supposed to do Kadosh. You're supposed to do Kachim. You're Kadoshim. We're holy because you are. And if you would do such a thing, that means that's Chulin. Chalila.
Wow.
I don't know if that's the pshat in the word Chalila. Doesn't sound right. Chozer Chalila means to return, right? Chalil is like Mechola, Mecholot, the circles, right? The reason why we call forgiving someone Mechila is because you come full circle and then you have reciprocal, you forgive each other.
Where does come Chaz v'Chalila?
So from these psukim.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Mochel is not a biblical word. Soleach and mechaper is, but so mochel is not. Mecholot are circular dances.
Mecholot
is the way Miriam dances in Parshas B'Shalach, the way Yiftach's daughter dances. Okay. Mecholot. Okay, so Chalila, you have the terminology in the Gemara, Chozer Chalila. It starts all over again. But that's from, again, from the Lashon Mecholot. All right? Okay, so he warns them that if you don't give up Sheva Ben Bichri, right, then I'm going to take over the whole town because he's a Rodef. So this wise woman tells him, "Hinei rosho mushloch elecha ba'arachoma." You're about to see his head thrown over the wall. "Vatavo isha el kol ha'am b'chachmasa v'yichusuas rosh sheva ben bichri v'yashlichu el yoav v'yiska b'shofar v'yafutz me'al ha'ir ish lo halav v'yoav shav l'yushalayim el ha'melech." Right, the woman came and expressed to the townsfolk how important it is to separate Sheva ben Bichri from his head. And they listened. They gave over the one person, because that one person was a Rodef Kesheva ben Bichri. You get that? Mm-hmm. Who's a Rodef not like Sheva ben Bichri? So this is in post-kim, like when people are searching for hiding, people who are hiding, and the baby starts crying, or there's a drunk man who's making too much noise or something like that, I don't know, whatever it might be. That person does, those people do seem to be a Rodef, but they're not like Sheva ben Bichri. Sheva ben Bichri was bemazed with intent to cause harm. These people aren't acting bemazed. Okay, I'll admit that there are many different approaches to this. All right. But the moral philosophy behind not giving over one person is another mission in Maseches Sanhedrin that says each and every individual is like an entire world. So a man was created alone. And that we're all a piece of God. We're all Tzelem Elokim. Yes, I can separate one human from another. I can't separate a piece of God, though. God is all of existence. So if each individual in that room is a piece of God, so that's why each one is like the whole world. I know in a practical sense, you know, sometimes you have to take into account the numbers. But this just explains the halacha, okay? All right, so v'yashlichu el Yoav, they tossed his head over to Yoav, okay? And Yoav went back to David. And then the rest of this parak just tells us the few people who were involved in helping David run the affairs of state. Okay? In Sefer Melochim, you have about 40 people who are helping Shlomo run the affairs of state. You get the point? That's what took down Rechavam's rule, that he was charging too much taxes. Shlomo's government became bloated and the taxes became confiscatory. Not only in the form of confiscatory literal taxation, but also in the form of work. Everyone had to go to work for free for the king for a few months of year, during the year. Right? Okay. All right, So now we're going to close out the book with four prokim that are meant to show how significantly David continued to be punished to the day he died for what he did with Bathsheba. Okay, the last months and years of David's life in Divrei Hayamim are glorious, filled with energy and vitality and koach and just the great workings of getting the Beis HaMikdash started. And here in Shmuel Bet, in the beginning of Melachim Aleph, is not so glorious. Right? Okay. It says, Vayira of Bimei David Shalosh Shanim Shana Acharei Shana. Isn't that usually what 3 years are? Maybe not. There's a famine, some time off, another famine. That's how famines tend to work. Right? Even if it lasts a year or two. But then they go, you know, and then it comes back possibly. But right. But anyway, this was 3 years in a row. No respite. Okay? The earth has been parched. And as religious people will always do, this is amazing. A religious person wants to know, why did that earthquake happen? Well, I'll tell you, because they're tectonic plates, they rubbed against each other. No, the religious person, especially the book of Divrei Hayamim, always has to explain anything like that in terms and light of our behavior. This is the Bible afterwards, after all. Okay? So if there's a famine, there's got to be something we're doing wrong. And David inquires of God. It doesn't say how or what or in what way. Okay. And Hashem tells David that it's because of Shaul. Who are the Givonim? They're the people who are attested of Sefer Yehoshua who duped Yehoshua into making a peace pact with them. They actually were the Chivi, one of the seven Canaanite nations.
Right. He killed them in Nov, I think.
Yes, so he says that he made them to be water carriers and woodcutters for the Kohanim. Okay. So that when Shaul killed off Nov, the people of Gibeon were either killed also, because they just killed everybody. Right. Or maybe it's a story that just doesn't appear in the Bible. Most Mefarshim don't go there, but it says that he did something to the Givonim. This is the source. Okay? He killed a bunch of Givonites. So David called over to the Gibbon. Also something we didn't know from the rest of Tanakh. Okay. Shaul wanted to wipe out the Givonim. It says, Bekano sol Bnei Yisrael Yehuda, because he was zealous for Bnei Yisrael and Yehuda to enhance their borders. Why are we giving land to the descendants of those who tricked us? Vema David Ela Givonim, Ma Eselachem, Uvamel Chaper, Ubarchu Es Nachlas Hashem. What can I do to get you to forgive us? That's an amazing thing for a king to ask. What do I have to do with you? But if God told me that it's something that happened to you, what a story. We should be so concerned. And Shaul, the problem shouldn't happen because of what Shaul did to the Kohanim? And we destroy the whole city of Kohanim? Putting out of work the people who worked for them is a worse crime? Just so happens the Gemara Yevamos, it's next week's Daf Yomi, says, yeah. Okay. So now there's a little give and take here that's a little disingenuous, because the Givonim responded and said, listen carefully to the words, Pasuk Tal, Vayomru lo ha-Givonim, Ein lanu kesef izahavim Shaul. In Beso. Okay, fair enough. We don't want money from him. Now here's the problem. Vein lanu ish lahamis b'Yisrael. We don't want anyone killed in Israel. V'yomer ma'atem omrim eseh lachem. What is it that you want? I'll do it in order to gain expiation and forgiveness. V'yomru ala melecha ish asher kulanu kilanu v'asher dimalanu. The man who tried to wipe us out. The man who tried to silence us. Nishmatnu meisyatzev b'chol gvul Yisrael, that we should be destroyed from standing anywhere in the borders of Israel. You took us in. You accepted us back in Sefer Yehoshua. Yutan lanu shiva anoshim yivana v'hokanum l'ashem b'givas sha'ul b'chir Hashem. Wait a second. Didn't they say we don't want to have anyone killed in Israel? This is two-faced. This isn't about face.
What, say that again?
They said, give us seven descendants of Shaul. We want to have them killed.
Uh-huh.
And David gave them over. Right? He gave over five children born to Michal. Michal was his wife. It should be Merav. But the Gemara says in Masechah Sanhedrin that she's called Michal here because Michal helped to raise Merav's children. She never had children of her own. Okay. And David gives them over. David has a famine to end. Notice there's no Urim Batumim here. David never asks the Urim Batumim. We'll have to continue with this. It's a very perplexing story how David gives into this and why they wanted it. Okay? But Chevra, next Monday, I will, Amyutz Hashem, be in Israel. I've asked Rabbi Varon to speak at this slot next week, but I will review everything. And I want to wish everybody a wonderful week. We're leaving for Israel tomorrow, please God. And we'll be back next week. And I'll write back on Friday the baby's name. It'll be still in the middle of the night, Thursday.
You travel safely.
Bye-bye, everybody.